Hello, welcome back to a brand new episode of Live Your Personal Best. Today is our first episode of a new type of episodes that I will be releasing on this podcast, which will be highlighting different athletes' achievements. I've done it a few times in the past with gold medal Olympian, Mackenzie Cohen had come on before, and you know, she was talking about these different progressive movements that she was making in the swimming field, and I loved that conversation. That was probably like a year ago now, last winter. And I loved being able to hear about, you know, like what athletes are currently doing in their field. And while it might not be motivational in the typical sense of like, oh yeah, I can do the same thing in my day today, I think that there's still some great motivation that you can get from seeing like these crazy things that different people do, you know, from the athletes that go on to row across the Atlantic Ocean to raise money for something versus first female athletes to break different records, right? There's so much like motivation that we can find in that. And so today's conversation is going to be one of those athlete spotlights. We are joined today by Jacob Perkins, and he is a world-ranked speed skier. And if you're not familiar with what that is, it's because it's not really a popular sport, especially in the United States. It's mostly over in Europe and has been removed as an Olympic sport. It was in for 1 year as a trial. I forget the right word of it, but they were like trying to see if it will be in the Olympics, and it got removed. And so Jacob is still competing as a speed skier and is actively trying to get it reintroduced to the Olympics. So I think that his story is super cool. We talk about what speed skiing is. We talk about what practices look like, what training's like, how he even got started in this like very little well-known sport. And if you are interested in seeing more what the sport looks like instead of just listening to it after, I encourage you to Google Jacob Perkins 100 mile per hour crash. Because it is this wild video where he's going down, wipes out. I'm sure he wouldn't mind me telling you to look this up, but it's just incredible because you hear him talk about like what led up to the crash and what happened after in today's episode. And so you're not going to want to miss that. So make sure to Google Jacob Perkins 100 mile per hour crash, and you're going to learn all about this new sport today. So I hope that you're excited for these new series of episodes that will be, you know, popping in occasionally. And with that, let's get started. What's up, and welcome to the Live Your Personal Best podcast. This is the place where I help current and former athletes like you to show up confidently in the gym and in life. I'm your host, Emily Kaufman, a former Division I athlete and author of Elite to Everyday Athlete. I'm going to show you how to stay motivated in reaching your goals and how to have more fun doing it. So let's sweat it out and start living your personal best. Hey guys, today we are joined by Jacob. He's a current world-ranked speed skater and former Division I tennis player from Indiana. I'm so excited that you're joining us today, Jacob.
Thank you, Emily. I appreciate you having me on your podcast.
Yeah, I'd love to start off just knowing more about the sport of speed skiing. Can you tell us more about like what it is? How do you get ranked? All of that.
Sure. Yeah. So it's basically where you're trying to ski in a straight line downhill as fast as possible. You're clocked through the timing zone at the bottom of the hill. There's two timing gates, and it's the average top speed wins. It's a heavily modified sport. We all are skiing on very long skis with aerodynamic helmets and specially shaped fairings and ski poles and fastest wins.
That's awesome. So what is like the fastest you've gone? What are the speeds that usually people are going?
So my top speed is 103.74 miles an hour. The current record is 158.42 miles an hour. So pretty fast.
That's crazy because, you know, I think the only thing comparable of me going in a small something going that fast is like a car, right? Like, obviously, I've been on planes that fast, but I think of like a car, and that even gets scary going like 100 miles per hour on the highway. So when you're going down, like, is this ever scary for you? Or what is that like?
The scariest part is in the acceleration and in the start. But once you get going and you focus in and pick up the speed, you actually feel like you're riding on a cushion of air, and you just kind of coast through the finish line. Sometimes there's a compression, which is where there's like a bump and you go down, and you'll feel a downward pressure force. But the acceleration phase of the run is sometimes, you could call it scary or exhilarating for some. And then obviously the mindset of preparing for the run. I think one of the hardest things is committing and in that initial push off, because the runs are very steep and very long, and it can be intimidating at times for some.
Yeah. And I'm sure at that speed, even little bumps probably get magnified when you're going that fast.
The runs are very well prepared. The course workers at all the events spend a lot of time making sure that the micro bumps and everything have been groomed out. And for some courses, they use lasers to actually gauge the slope and make sure that there's no undulations. But it's not uncommon, especially in the top parts of the run or even at the bottom, to be some bumps, and at times you'll get airborne at those speeds. But the important thing to realize is, because we're in a tuck, we're only seeing 10 to 15 feet out in front of us. We're not standing up as if you're casually skiing. So everything's coming so fast, and a lot of times you have to kind of feel the terrain instead of being able to anticipate it. But that's also why inspecting the course and knowing how to anticipate those terrain changes is so important.
Yeah, I didn't even think about that fact that you can only see 10 feet ahead of you. But I'm sure, you know, you've probably practiced on the course so many times, you can kind of expect of like when to know when the finish line's coming up and everything.
Yeah. I mean, we typically practice at much lower speeds than 100 miles an hour. Back at the local resort in Ohio where I practice, I'm typically skiing around 60 to 65, so almost half the speed, but you can still learn a lot at those slower speeds and get used to being in a tuck, testing your equipment out, making sure you're in the right position. But being in that, the helmets we wear, they're almost like a Darth Vader looking helmet. They're cone shaped and slash teardrop shaped, and they're very, very aerodynamic. And inside, you can only see, like I was saying, 10 to 15 feet, because the visor on the helmet's typically not very large. And then plus, when your head's down in the tuck, that angle doesn't allow you to see out very far.
Yeah. So I'd love to hear more about how you got started in this, because I know that in college you were a Division I tennis player. So did you always do tennis and speed skiing? Did this come after? Like, how did that work together?
Yeah. So I got in to speed skiing actually after my college career ended. I still do play tennis. I currently compete on this thing. It's called the UTR Pro Circuit. It's the ITF, it's the lower levels of professional tennis. But I thoroughly enjoy it because it's a way for me to keep my hand in the game and keep competing. And there's a lot of similarities. It's great between tennis and skiing. It's great cross training, the lateral movement and balance from skiing. And it's just a good overall body workout. But when I got into skiing was actually before I went off to college. I competed in slalom and giant slalom skiing at a recreational level, USSA, Masters. I was never a top level slalom or giant slalom skier. I was a good club skier, good nationally ranked skier, but it wasn't like I was going to make it into the Olympics or go pro in skiing. But I've been playing tennis my whole life. I started when I was 7 years old. I competed in all the junior tournaments, got ranked pretty highly nationally, and then got picked up by Southern Illinois, and then played 4 years for Southern Illinois, and then played my last year. I actually transferred to Wright State, and I had to redshirt that year / transfer due to an injury, and also the program got cut at Southern Illinois. So I played a lot of tennis in college, and I still do play tennis, but the speed skiing was something I've actually got into a year after I got done with college tennis. It was when I was 25. I'm currently almost 29. So I've been doing it about 4 years.
Yeah. So you graduated and then you kind of already had the background in skiing. So you're like, oh, let's try this different type of skiing. Or is it like popular out where you live?
It's not very popular where I live. I mean, out west, there's people that used to compete on the World Cup, and speed skiing was actually in the Olympics in '92 in Albertville, as a demonstration sport. So there's been a lot of history with speed skiing in the United States. Actually, American won the bronze medal back when it was in the Olympics. But recently, there's not been a lot of interest in the sport, and that's something I hope to change. It's really big over in Europe. A lot of the clubs and ski resorts, they have programs. France does a great job. Sweden does a great job, but it's heavily dominant, European dominant. But I would like to get more people in the States interested in the sport. It was kind of interesting how I got into it. It was one of these things where I was looking for a way to get back into competing. And I just started looking for competitive skiing events that I could do. And with my skill set in alpine racing, and I'm like, huh, there's this thing called speed skiing, and it looks really cool. It looks futuristic. The speed, the adrenaline, it was something I wanted to do. And the great thing about the speed ski community is they're all there to help you. I feel like in tennis and in other sports, it's such an individual sport. And it's almost like people don't want you to necessarily get into it. But with speed skiing, all the fellow racers in the US, as well as a lot of racers over in Europe, they've helped me with understanding the equipment setup and how to get into competition. So it just kind of naturally worked out.
Yeah, that's awesome. I've also did a very small sport as a coxswain for the rowing team. And same thing, like you hear someone else say that they're a coxswain, you're like, oh yeah, like they must know. It's like a very tight-knit community versus maybe some of the bigger sports, you like don't have that. So that's great to hear. And then you mentioned that tennis training was very similar to the speed skiing training. I'd love to hear more about that. Like, what does the training look like? Is it every day out on the mountain, or is it a lot of strength training? What is the focus there?
It depends on the time of the year. Like right now, I'm in the off season, so there's no snow around, so you can't ski, but you can do rollerblading. You can do aerodynamic testing and wind tunnels. You can make changes with your equipment because it takes a long time to develop the equipment, like the helmets, the poles, get the binding set up. So this is the time when I'm making those changes. And then as far as workouts, I work out actually 7 days a week. I know some people say, oh, you should take a day off, but I'm not doing the same exercises every day. I'm focusing on different things. And my theory behind it, I like to do a lot of high intensity circuit training and get an overall strength and cardio workout. I'm not going in and just like lifting one rep or two reps. And I found that to be very efficient. And by not trying to necessarily max out on any particular weight, but push your comfort level and get higher in that comfort zone, I found that I've been able to get stronger and I can work out up to 7 days a week and not feel sore or burn out.
Yeah. You seem like you like the routine and the structure, because when we're first talking, you're like, oh yeah, this is my off season. But then I guess in your off season for skiing, it's just your on season for tennis. So you're always going with something.
Yes, yeah, it's a never-ending thing. We always joke about it because it's like people think from the outside that skiing is, oh, it's just a wintertime thing. But no, a lot of the skiers in the summer, they're going to camps either out at Mount Hood on the glacier and doing training, or they're going over to Saas Fees and doing training on the glaciers over in Europe. It's a year-round sport at a high level, but just at different times of the year, you're focusing on different aspects of the sport.
Yeah. So will you go travel to Europe a bunch for trainings, or like where are the major competitions for this?
Yeah, so all the competitions currently are located over in Europe. A couple years ago, before the coronavirus, there was a competition in Sun Peaks, Canada. I hope to bring back, it's in British Columbia. I hope to bring back a competition in Canada or North America soon, and been working with the Canadian team. But all the competitions are over in Europe. And as far as training, I do all my training here stateside. Like I was saying, at the local resort in Ohio, it's only 400 to 500 vertical feet versus most of the speed runs are around 1,000 feet. But like I was saying, even at the lower speeds, you can learn a lot and get a good feel for your equipment and your tuck position. And then I try to make 1 to 2 trips out west to see other speed skiers and work on equipment and testing as well.
Yeah, that's awesome. I'd love to hear more about your last competition, season 2. So I know that for the 2022 FIS World Cup, you recently placed there. Can you kind of like walk us through that competition and how that all went about?
Yeah, so it's been kind of a breakout season for me. So I've been doing this for 4 years. For the first 3 years, I competed on what was called S2. It's the lower level category or feeder category into the World Cup competitions. It's run on just standard downhill equipment. We don't have the aerodynamic helmets or extremely long skis. We're just on standard downhill skis. I did really well in that. And the previous year before COVID struck, reached sixth in that category. And then this year was my first year on the, it's called S1 category or the World Cup category. I competed in, there's multiple locations and multiple competitions at each location. So I competed in Finland, Sweden, and then actually I was going to compete in Andorra, but several of the competitions got canceled due to weather. But I was very happy for first year with my results. And especially considering that we've been coming out, coming past the coronavirus, and the past 2 years, a lot of the competitions have either been canceled or there's been so many restrictions that only racers from that country could participate.
Oh, that's so interesting. And as you mentioned, there's none even in the United States. So it's not like you had any advantage there.
Yeah, basically last year. So I got 2 years in the lower category. And then last year, I wasn't able to compete at all because you couldn't travel anywhere due to all the coronavirus restrictions. And most of the races, FIS actually canceled, or like I was saying, it was limited to only racers within that country.
Yeah. So now that you moved up, you know, from the F2 to 1, is it just a like stricter competition pool, or is it a bigger like mountain that you go down? Are there any changes to kind of like the style that you have to do?
Yeah, the actual track is the same. We run the S2 and the S1, but the speeds are much higher in the S1. So for example, in the Sweden track where you saw that fall, the typical speed in S2 on that track was around 80 to 90 miles an hour versus in S1 it's 110 miles an hour. So it's noticeably faster, and the equipment is very different. And then also too, the people you're competing against are a different level. A lot of the racers are doing it full-time professionally or semi-professionally. And they, not to say that in S2, they're not taking it seriously, but for a lot of the S1 guys, it's their, you know, it's their job almost, so to speak, focusing on the sport.
Yeah. And you have a background in engineering too, right? Like you have a lot of input with your own equipment and stuff. Is that like an advantage that you have, or do you find that a lot of the competitors also have this background in engineering too?
There are several competitors that do have other professions that include engineering, aerospace, former Air Force, ex-car racing, people that have been heavily involved like with equipment aspects that can translate to the sport. I think for me, it helps. I will say sometimes because I know a lot about it, I think sometimes it's easy to always be tweaking your equipment. And at some point, especially like when you're in the season, you know, you're out of time. You kind of have to go with what you have. Like between competitions, I'll make some changes, but the big changes are happening like right now in the off season.
Yeah. That's interesting. So you're almost like, okay, now I can't overthink it and like have to focus now back on the sport and the training.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. So I had seen a video that you had posted of this big wipeout at 100 miles per hour that you were then sliding down the mountain. And luckily, you know, you're okay from that. But have you ever had to deal with any injuries? Are injuries kind of common in this sport from falls?
So actually, after that fall, the next day I was skiing and I actually tried to compete, but the race officials deemed because I had some bruising and stuff, that it would be better to postpone and race in the next competition. But I walked away from that crash with basically no injuries besides some bruising. And I attribute that to the course workers and the safety officials at the event in Sweden. And then I also attribute that to the protective gear and the training that we do. I mean, we all wear back protection underneath. I wear a layer to two layers of protective clothing / base layers underneath our suits. And that greatly eliminates a lot of the burning and bruising that we could experience if we do fall.
That's good. So even though it looks very, very serious, you're usually like, okay, it's only a few bruises. It's not anything too threatening, which is good.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what people get confused is they think like this because the speed's so high, but I mean, on the sides of the course, it's all breakaway netting. The course is very, like I was saying, is meticulously groomed. There's medical people there, you know, if anything was to happen. So it's actually fairly safe. I've never been hurt in speed skiing. I've actually had more injuries in tennis, but they've been overuse injuries.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I'd love to getting to know more about speed skiing, all of that. What is next for you? You know, you're kind of on the off season from one sport going into tennis, but what are kind of your next goals from here?
Yeah. So I tried to make a short list of goals for each year. And one of the things that I do with the goals that I set is I make sure that I'm pushing myself, but that it is an achievable goal. So I think my realistically, like this next year, since I went about 166, 167 K this year, that a good goal for this next year would be about 180 K as a top speed. And then I would like to increase my position in a World Cup race. Currently, I've placed 18th, which is about middle of the pack. I'd like to get a top 10 or top 15 finish, and then just overall improve my standings as well.
Yeah, that's awesome. It's crazy because, you know, that difference between speeds is like 20 kilometers per hour, but you know, both of them are such big numbers. I'm like, oh, the first one was fast. The second one's even faster.
Yeah, a K in speed skiing is a big difference because, I mean, typically the difference between the winner and the person that's middle or placing third, it's a couple K difference on a track.
Oh, wow. So they're pretty close margins.
Yeah. Yeah. It's very competitive. And like I was saying, even though I've only been 100 in 3.74 and the record's 158, the record was actually set on a different track where the top speed on that track is much higher than the track that I was competing on. So that it does make a lot of difference, the snow conditions, the track, the weather, and then just overall who's competing and where they're running the race on the track.
Yeah. No, that's so interesting. Well, thank you so much for joining us today. Where can people find you, follow your races, support, all of that?
Yeah, so go to jacobperkins.org and there will be updates on competitions as well as information about speed skiing and the sport.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.